Welcome back into the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Sap, presented by Full Press Coverage. Yeah, usually we just do all NBA stuff, but right before we went on, Sap and I were joking about his guy, Aaron Rodgers, and Sap apparently has adopted a new quarterback in time for conference championship weekends. You're a big Joe Burrow guy now, Sap?
Yeah, I started, I'd say, at the end of last year, I really liked watching him play. I called him Baby Brady. I think I coined that phrase, hashtag Baby Brady. He's the closest of the young quarterbacks in terms of style to Tom Brady. He also has got that great leadership ability. I just like his personality. He's really cool. He's confident. Some would say cocky. I also like the fact that he's kind of weighed into social issues. Full support of the LGBTQ community, women's reproductive rights. He's in support of women with that. And also he's kind of into animal rights activism. I just like the guy. He just seems like a really good dude. And you know, it's easy to say Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. You know, those are the two guys that everybody seems to love. But I'm going with Joe Burrow, so I'm rooting for the Bengals to win the Super Bowl, which is probably bad news for them, since every time I adopt a new team, they always find a way to screw up.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, as Joe Burrow's stock rises, your guy Aaron Rodgers, maybe he's your former guy now.
He's still my guy, but not for long. He's not going to play more than probably two more seasons. Although, who the hell knows with him?
Yeah, he's just now he's in the airing of grievances stage of his career, where he's blaming big pharma and woke culture, and you know, for people being mean to him, and Rob Gronkowski saying you should focus more on Super Bowls instead of winning MVPs. And so he's got a lot of grievances. You think he's going to the Jets next year? Yep. I think that would be a very interesting experiment that is just doomed to fail, which I am okay with.
The Jets haven't had a good quarterback since Joe Namath left town like 45 years ago. So why not take a chance with the modern Joe Namath? Because Namath and Rodgers, if you watch Namath, especially when he was healthy at Alabama early with the Jets, just to watch the way he threw the football, so similar to the way Rodgers throws the football. Yeah, why not make the Jets relevant again?
Joe, another victim of woke big pharma culture, Sap, because, you know, when he kissed Susie Colbert, everybody came for him. And I'm sure that Aaron Rodgers blames, you know, big pharma for that too.
They would be good together.
But we can move on to basketball, because that's what the show is about. Just wanted to get a quick football note in there. We got some interesting things going around the association. We'll start with a trade that just happened, Sap. The Lakers actually kicking off trade season, as the trade deadline is February 9th, and it's rapidly approaching. The Lakers, who we've been talking about for months, need to make a move. They did. Is it a move that will push them in the championship contention? I don't think so, but I do find that it was a good move, and I think that it helped the team. They acquire Rui Hachimura from the Washington Wizards, former lottery pick, decent 3-point shooter. He's averaging 13 points and 4 rebounds a game this season. They gave up Kendrick Nunn for him, who, you know, really isn't doing all that much except for being injured quite a lot, and then a bunch of second round picks, which are essentially meaningless. Sap, you're the Lakers guy. What do you think?
Well, it's getting an average player in Hachimura who, you know, just look at his numbers, 13 points, 4 rebounds, 36% from three. Those are all like average numbers for an NBA player. Even his size is average, like 6'8", 230. It's like he's a cookie cutter average NBA player. They only gave up a below average player in Kendrick Nunn, who's been injured for the last, you know, mostly for the last year and a half. He's been playing some this year. So you give up a below average player for an average player, forget the second round picks. They mean nothing. So a slight improvement for the Lakers, but they need to add more if they're going to be in real contention in the Western Conference. Again, if they can go out and find some elite 3-point shooters, that would be great. But how many teams are going to be in a sell mode right now, Jeff? Because you just look at the standings. There's only two teams in the Eastern Conference. That's Detroit and Charlotte. Two teams in the Western Conference, San Antonio and Houston, that are more than 3 games away from the play-in. So 26 of the 30 teams are already slated to be in the playoffs, or at least within 3 games of the play-in. Now, that doesn't mean that some of those teams won't sell, because they know they don't have a real shot to win it. But this is kind of an open season, right? Especially in the Western Conference. I know we're going to talk about how bunched up that is. That this isn't, you know, 6 years ago where we were like, okay, it's going to be Cleveland and Golden State in the finals. So everybody else can be in a sell mode to try to look forward to the next year. There's a lot of teams, places like Sacramento or Indiana, that have surprised, that may want to at least qualify for the playoffs. So they may not be in sell mode as we approach the trade deadline. By the way, why is the trade deadline so early this year?
Yeah, it's like the earliest
I can remember it. Way too early.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see why they have it that early. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. So much basketball left to be played afterwards. And then, you know, you're talking about teams may need help because of injuries. And I don't know, people, maybe the league is just so counting on the buyout market to also be exciting, but sometimes mm-hmm. that's a complete dud. But I agree with you, Sap. It's far too early. I don't see, in a year where it's so bunched up like this too, it really seems to do the league a disservice to have the trade deadline so early. So yeah, as teams are, you know, right now it's the 26th of January, the deadline's the 9th. So teams are going to have to make some decisions very quickly on whether they're going to, you know, go for that play-in spot or try to bottom out. As you mentioned, there's just four teams that as of right now you can say, okay, they're definitively bottoming out: Charlotte, Detroit, Houston, San Antonio. They might be, you know, they may be active at the deadline as sellers. I don't know that they have a lot of pieces that other teams want. You know, there's some veterans like Terry Rozier on Charlotte. He might be going somewhere. Bogdanovich on Detroit. You've been hearing him be talked about for a while. The Pistons apparently want a first round pick for him, though. The Rockets have Eric Gordon, and the Spurs have Jakob Poeltl. So those guys are the guys from those bottom teams that you know you could see move. That doesn't mean they all will be, but you know, there's some veteran pieces on each of those teams that could be traded. And as far as those other teams, Sap, you know, you're talking about teams that, like you said, are only a few games out of the play-in if they're not in already. And teams like the Blazers, who started out great this year, and now they've really fallen behind, even though Damian Lillard continues to play spectacular, having a 60-point game just last night. They're saying they're committed to building around him. They're not going to sell off. So and teams don't look like they're, you know, really at this point trying to tank for Wembanyama to the extent that I thought that they were going to, but that could all change on February 9th.
Right. And again, with that early trade deadline, executives are going to have to make those tough decisions. Are they going to sell or are they going to stand pat? What are those fringe contending teams going to do, like the Lakers, who I think if they can add a shooter or two could vault right up the rankings in the Western Conference and actually contend, because now Anthony Davis is back, although that's always a big question mark, and LeBron's playing at an MVP level. He's not going to win the MVP or probably even finish in the top five because his team is still below 500, but he's playing at an incredible level, especially for a guy 38 years old. So yeah, a lot of decisions have to be made, and that trade deadline to me is just way too early. But you know, after the trade deadline, you still have 2 months of play. So we'll see what happens with the buyout market as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, one team that I think that is feeling like they don't need to make a move because they're really finding their footing after a rocky start, Sap, too, is the Philadelphia 76ers, who are suddenly looking like the championship contender that a lot of people thought they were going to be. They're now 31-16, three games behind the Boston Celtics for first place in the Eastern Conference. They have won six games in a row, and they've beaten some quality opponents recently. Sap, beat your Lakers by a point mm-hmm. in LA, beat the Clippers in LA. They had a perfect Western Conference road trip, beat the Jazz, Lakers, Clippers, Blazers, and Kings. And then the other night, they had a great game against the Brooklyn Nets last night. That was a powerhouse performance from, you know, two Eastern Conference contenders, though no Kevin Durant in that game. And Joel Embiid comes on top in that game. They have a big game coming up in 2 days against the Denver Nuggets. That should be, you know, a really fun one against the two best centers in the league, and Embiid and Jokic. But the Sixers are playing great basketball now, Sap. And it took them a little while to figure out, but where do they stand in terms of you looking at title contenders?
You always have to question the Sixers, right? Because they'll get to the second round of the playoffs. They'll have a lead. And we know that Doc Rivers, throughout his career, has blown a lot of leads, right? I think he's blown three 3-1 leads and three 3-2 leads as a head coach. So that kind of lingers there as well. And Embiid is always a player that, you know, how healthy he's going to be at the end. Is Harden going to be in good enough shape? Exactly what are they going to do? I mean, they're playing excellent basketball right now. You look at their big three, you've got Embiid right there with Luka Doncic leading the league in scoring. He's a certain MVP candidate, right? Although he's missed about a dozen games, but he's still a contender for that award. You've got Harden, who's missed 16 games, but playing at a nice high level, a 20-10 guy every night. And then you've got Tyrese Maxey, who missed 19 games is averaging 20 points per game. So those three guys have missed games, and now you've got them together, so it is a true big three. And since they've been back together, they've been playing at a very, very high level. I mean, when you have three guys who can score like that, you're going to get 75 points a night from Embiid, Maxey, and Harden. That's a pretty good start, right? And then you got Tobias Harris as a ninth, fourth option, averaging 16 points per game. They do a lot of really good things, and there's some tough matchups there, especially Embiid. He's uncoverable. Maybe the most dominant force in the league in terms of the skill and the size and all of that. They're certainly a contending team. The Celtics seem to really match up well against them because you got Rob Williams and Al Horford who do a nice job against Embiid. You only try to contain him, obviously. He's unstoppable. But, yeah, you've got to throw them in the mix with Milwaukee, Brooklyn. I still like Cleveland, although they've kind of fallen a little bit here with some injuries and some unfocused play, to say the least. But the East is loaded. And now you've got Miami, who is starting to play much better basketball. They're in the sixth slot. So you look at those six teams, they're all contenders. I still think the Celtics are the best team in the Eastern Conference. But Philadelphia, if those three guys stay healthy and they can carry that into the postseason, it'll be a tough matchup because Tyrese Maxey, you look at him, he may be the second best player on that team. It may not be James Harden. So now if Harden's your third best player, you're pretty darn good.
Yeah, and they're using him off the bench now. It's kind of like that was almost by accident because, you know, like you said, the injuries, and so they were working him back a little bit slowly. But it's really working with him coming off the bench. It's, you know, providing a big scoring punch for them. And they're also getting some excellent play out of DeAnthony Melton, who they acquired in the offseason. P.J. Tucker, you always know he's going to compete defensively. He's playing well in the starting lineup. They weren't, you said this earlier in the year, Sap, you made note of it. They weren't really playing Tybal all that much. And now they've been playing him more, you know, around 15 minutes a night. And their record when he plays versus when he doesn't play is startling. They're outstanding when he does play a certain amount of minutes, you know, over 10 or something like that. And they're very poor when he doesn't. So I don't know why it took Doc Rivers that long to figure out. Is he a threat offensively? No, not really, but he is one of the best on-ball defenders in the league, and he certainly gives them something. He's worth playing, and now that he's playing a little bit more consistent, they're, you know, winning games. It's a deep roster that they have on the Sixers, and I think people were writing them off early because it took them a little while to figure out, but they're playing, I'd say, the best basketball of any team in the league right now. But I do think your point is fair, Sap, that in the postseason they become different because the conditioning of Joel Embiid and James Harden. Maybe the youth of Tyrese Maxey is the X factor here in the playoffs for them, and that changes the equation.
Yeah, I mean, just a note to Doc Rivers, too. If you're in a playoff series and it's game five or whatever, and you're up 31 points with like a minute and a half left, take Joel Embiid out of the game. You know, this is how he got hurt last year, and it really impacted what the 76ers were trying to do in the postseason. You're not going anywhere without that guy being healthy. So, you know, manage his minutes, which I think is imperative for a guy of that size. I mean, he's just a massive man who's extremely well-skilled. I also think with Matisse Thybul, is there some issue with Doc Rivers? Like, again, Doc is a veteran coach, and sometimes these veteran coaches – put a player in the doghouse and they don't let him out. I mean, that kid should be playing more. You've got plenty of scoring on that team. Like I said, you have 320 point per game plus scorers. Heck, you've got one who's a 33 points per game scorer. Like I said, on average, you get 75 points a night from Embiid, Maxey, and Harden. Now, maybe that'll go down a little bit when they're all playing. You know, a lot of that can be built up because only two are playing on certain nights, et cetera. But then you also got Tobias Harris who can get you 20 at any moment. So you've got scoring there. Why not play this kid more, especially as you look forward to the postseason, because he's an outstanding defender. So I don't know if there's some sort of issue with Thybul and Doc Rivers. You know, those are things that we'll find out more as we get to the postseason.
Yeah, it's a fair question to ask. And I think you raise a good point with some of these veteran coaches get, you know, prickly in their older age. It's not an NBA thing. It's a cross sports thing too. You know, we've seen it with Belichick and the Patriots that for some reason they don't play players that can help them out. Who can forget
Tony La Russa managing the Chicago White Sox, you know, like bickering with his own player for hitting a grand slam or whatever, because, you know, he's kind of out of touch. You have to be communicating with the players at some point. And I've always felt that the best coaches understand what a player can do, not necessarily what he can't do, and try to build on what he can do. Is Thybul an offensive weapon, like you said, Jet? No, but, you know, you don't need five scorers on the floor at the same time. You need somebody to defend, and he certainly can do that.
Yeah. You know, It's staying in the Eastern Conference for a second, Sep. I'm glad you're mentioning coaching because it was a topic of conversation, at least on, you know, around here in the Boston, New England area with the Celtics. Two losses in a row, one to the not very good but spunky Orlando Magic, and another one to the Miami Heat, who were without Jimmy Butler. The Celtics were out for their key players. But you did have Jason Tatum in that game. It came down to the last possession. The Celtics did blow a lead in the fourth quarter. And this has been a topic of conversation throughout the year with Joe Mazzulla, the Celtics interim head coach, is that he's not – his timeout usage is being questioned a lot, and he doesn't call a lot of them. So I know you watched that, but just to give everybody, if you didn't watch, a refresher, the Celtics were down by a point with about 14 seconds left or so. Jason Tatum walked the ball up the court very, you know, slowly, setting up clearly for trying to win the game with a three-pointer. Got double-teamed, threw the ball away out of bounds, and then that was essentially the end of the game. Sap, do you have a problem with Joe Mazzulla's not calling a timeout there? Is that more Jason Tatum? And in general, what are your thoughts about Mazzulla's timeout usage?
Well, the idea there is to keep the Heat defensive players on the court, like Tyler Hero or someone that you want to have on the court to attack, right? So that they can't call a timeout, and then Eric Spoelstra can go ahead and try to substitute in his best defensive unit. Now, the other thing is it almost felt like Jason Tatum felt that the game was tied. There was like no urgency in that offensive set. Like, I don't think he thought the game was tied. They were down. So there didn't seem to be any urgency there. And again, there's a difference between urgency and rushing. You know, there's a fine line there. I think John Wooden famously said, play fast, but don't rush. Or maybe I'm just paraphrasing what he said, but it's a good point. Like, you can play fast, but you don't want to be out of control and rushing. And it just seemed like they were kind of reversed of that and lackadaisical in that setup. I'm still wondering why he's still an interim head coach. They have the best record in basketball, and he's still interim head coach. That seemed a little weird.
Yeah, I heard Felger talking about this yesterday, I think, in that, you know, he's wondering. I think, you know, you and I are not lawyers, Sap. I think, you know, we have some rudimentary
Don't give up on me. I'm only 60. Maybe I'll go to law school.
I think that's just not in the cards for you, my friend. I'm sorry.
No.
Maybe a doctor, but not a lawyer at this point.
Oh boy, that would be dangerous.
So I listen. You know, I'm gonna default to defending the Celtics in a lot of these circumstances because, you know, I'm a Celtics honk. It's just in my DNA. I will criticize them at times, but I think with this, it's probably a contractual thing with Udoka, in that they don't want to, you can't name somebody a head coach if you already have a head coach, and Udoka is technically the head coach, but suspended. Mm-hmm. And then, so it's some legalese. That's my guess. I can't say that definitively. And also, you know, Sap, let's say that that's, you know, not the case at all. Then we can get into speculation on whether they think Mazzulla is, you know, the right guy for the job. And I think that the real test of that will be in the playoffs. You know, I think that, you know, if they have a great regular season and they flame out in the playoffs, you can seriously look at changing your head coach, because, you know, of the way he was hired was you had to do it sort of quickly and you had to go in-house. And, you know, he was inexperienced to start with. So I think it kind of gives you a built-in period of time to evaluate him. That's different than if you had hired, you know, a coach in a regular coach hiring cycle.
Could it be a money thing too? Because if you name him a head coach, now you got to give him a 4-year, I don't know, $16 million contract. And at the end of the year, they lose in the second round to Milwaukee or whatever happens. It's a disappointing year. And you're like, okay, he's not the right guy. And now you're on the hook for all of that money. Maybe that's a bone of contention for Wick Grosbeck. I haven't been overly impressed. I mean, I think their defense is not as good as it was last year. I mean, part of it is Rob Williams was out for a period of time. Now you've seen Marcus Smart out for a period of time. And now they're a year older. They're more of a veteran team. They know they don't have to play defense 48 minutes every single night. No team does. And also they got off to a good start. So they've never been behind the eight ball like they were last year, where they started, 18-21. So from that point forward, they had to play near perfect basketball to get to the two seed. I mean, right now they're in complete control of the one seed in the Eastern Conference, and that's even coming off of back-to-back losses. I also think that this weird stretch that they had one in December. When they play the Golden State Warriors, is that a game that just takes so much out of them that they kind of go into a funk for a little bit of period of time? Remember when they were playing Golden State back in December? They were just blowing doors off everyone. I think the game before that, they beat Phoenix by like 28 or 34, some ridiculous score. They lost to Golden State, and that kicked off like a 5-7 stretch where they went, you know, 5 wins, 7 losses over 12 games. Then they righted the ship, and then now they had another tough game last week against Golden State, found a way to win. It wasn't overly impressive, but they won. They won their next game, but then they lost to Orlando, who just seems to be a bad matchup for them for whatever reason. And then Miami, look, Miami's not frightened of the Celtics, right? Whether Butler's playing or not, Eric Spoelstra's not intimidated by the Boston Celtics, even as talented as the Celtics are. So, you know, you just look at it as a back-to-back nights in Florida, which can be kind of a wonky trip, and they faltered a little bit. So, you know, I haven't been overly impressed. I think their offense is good, but they've got a lot of offensive talents. You know, so I like the fact that they play with more pace than they have in the past, which I think is a good thing. So if you want to give Missoula credit for that, go right ahead. The defense isn't quite as good. And I'll just throw this out to you. Is there any chance that if this doesn't end well this year, that Ime Udoka is back next year as their head coach?
Like 1%? 0.5 or 1%.
Okay. Yeah. Even less than that. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. We, you know, where do things.
The chance is.
Because we still don't know what happened.
Tatum demands it. That's the only way I think it happens.
Yeah.
Is if Tatum and Brown say, you have to bring him back. He's our guy.
Right.
We will be really upset if he's not. And that's the only way I see it happening.
But we know that Missoula's close with Tatum, right?
Right.
That seems to be
known. But your relationships change when you're the head coach versus the assistant coach.
Right. And also when you're 24 years old. I mean, that can flip at a moment's notice. I don't know if Brown is that close to Missoula. I don't know how that relationship is. You know, Missoula, after the game against Miami, said I had the ball in my best player's hands, which we all agree. Jason Tatum is the best player on the team. But if you're Jaylen Brown, you're probably like, I played pretty well this year. Maybe I'm not quite Jason, but I'm sure in Jaylen Brown's mind, he's right there with Jason as the co-best player on the team. Yep. But it's just weird things that can happen. Like you said, a 34-year-old head coach and your two best players are 24 and 25 years old. I mean, damn, it feels like you could add those guys' ages up together and about my age. So that makes me feel old.
Yeah. I don't really have a problem with him being the interim head coach because of the way he was hired, that it was like, again, so rapid and their backs were against the wall. They really had to go in-house and they went with the guy who was the most popular in-house, candidate. They had to move so quickly. The season was about to start. I do think that if they have a disappointing run in the postseason, which really is anything less than getting to the NBA Finals, in my mind for them.
I think winning I think it's that high. I mean, I think they're the best team in basketball. Golden State's a horrible matchup for whatever reason, but I don't know if Golden State's going to be there. They barely are in the play-in at this point, but I think the measuring stick is win the championship. I mean, they're set up to do that.
I think if Missoula gets I agree with you. It should be, and they do seem like the best team in basketball in terms of like roster and everything like that. And they've from day one basically had the lead in terms of standings in the NBA. If they get there, I think his job will be safe. Anything less, I think that they seriously examine who they could bring in as a coach. If there's more of a veteran head coach and stuff like that, because I agree. I don't think he's been overly impressive. I think the roster, I mean, I don't give as minimal coaching credit as like guys like Felger think it don't matter. Doesn't matter one bit in the NBA. I don't go that far, but obviously the roster is the most important thing. And I think anyone could do a pretty good job with this roster. I don't see that anything Missoula has done has been particularly impressive. I don't think he's done anything poor other than his timeout usage, but I do think it's fair to say because of the way he was hired, they didn't really have a chance to interview many other candidates. He's on, you know, thin ice in terms of we're not going to just go to bat for this guy because, you know, the team did well in the regular season. If they flame out in the postseason, I think there's a very real chance they look at another, an external candidate.
And he was the one assistant coach who was tied to Brad Stevens. The other assistant coaches were tied to Ime Udoka. So maybe Brad Stevens said, I want to put my guy in there to distance this from Ime Udoka. Who knows what the mindset was there, but it had to be done quickly, right? Because it was like 2 weeks before, like a week before media day, for God's sake. So they had to do something quickly. So it was a weird situation. And look, they're the best record in basketball. So it's been a pretty good 4 months. It's just that sometimes you see these stretches where it looks like they're disinterested or a little off, but then you can also mark it up that, you know, when you have four prominent players out of the lineup, it's going to be difficult to win games.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So I think there's still a lot to play out with the Joe Mazzulla situation, and it's going to all play out in the postseason because the Celtics were the title favorites at the beginning of the season. So far, they've played to that expectation by having the best record in the NBA, despite, you know, some frustrating losses here and there. They still are 35-14, you know, best record in the league, three games up in their own in the Eastern Conference. And so until they falter, you got to give, you know, the team credit, but, and hopefully they don't from, you know, for my mental health. But there's still a lot of story here to play out, and we'll see what they do at the trade deadline too, is they'll be an interesting team that, you know, may look to add a little bit potentially. So that's certainly all on the table, but we can turn our attention to the Western Conference, Sap, where you alluded to a little bit earlier, is just so insanely jumbled up, especially after you get by Denver, is up 2.5 games on Memphis and 6 games on the Kings. And then everybody else is basically in the exact same spot, from the Pelicans at the 4 seed right now, all the way down to the Lakers at the 10, 11, 12, 13 seed. They're separated by 3 games.
3 games, yeah. I mean, you got New Orleans is 26-23. They're the 4 seed. The Lakers are 23-26. They're the 13 seed. So 10 teams are separated by 3 games. It's crazy. It really is. That's why, you know, if the Lakers can add a shooter or two, they could vault up to the 4 seed, right? I mean, they should be good enough for that. I mean, who had Sacramento as the 3 seed 4 months into the season?
Right.
I don't think Shaquille O'Neal did, because he's part owner of the Kings, if I'm correct.
I think he actually sold his stake in them.
Oh, he did.
He
okay.
Was. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so who thought the Sacramento Kings would be the third best team in the West? I don't think they're the third best team in the West, but they have the third best record. I mean, I picked Denver before the season. I still like them a lot. I want to see if they can add another shooter, because that's kind of what you look at the trade deadline. And Nikola Jokic is having yet another MVP season and may become only second player in league history to win 3 consecutive MVPs. The other player, of course, Larry Bird in the 80s. I think it's going to be difficult for him to win the MVP because there's so many other guys that are deserving. Do you give the same guy 3 straight MVPs unless he's blowing everyone away? Probably not. But yeah, this Western Conference is crazy. Golden State's kind of just lurking there. They've been around 500. It seems like in big games they can still play, but they're so poor on the road, right? So if you're, you know, the 6th seed, you're going to have to win all your series on the road. So you're going to probably have to win 2 games on the road in every series, because you tend to lose 1 at home anyway. You know, so are they capable of doing that? I guess. I mean, they got all those veteran players. The team that kind of lurks there for me is the Clippers, because when Kawhi and Paul George are healthy and engaged, they got a really deep roster. They play defense. They could be a team that, you know, could scare the hell out of everybody. But yeah, I can't recall a conference being this jumbled. I think that's the perfect word you use, Jet, 4 months into the season. I mean, these teams are approaching 50 games played. The trade deadline is in 2 weeks. The All-Star game's coming up, and the West is like, you know, one day you're the 10 seed, the next day you're the 6 seed. It's that close.
Yeah, obviously, you know, like you said, the Golden State Warriors are the boogeyman in that conference for sure. Mm-hmm. And right now, as you said, they sit at the 9 seed, but they could easily, you know, fall behind the Lakers, the Blazers, the Thunder could overtake them, and they could be on the outside looking in. It's that tight. I think with Golden State, you know, their biggest enemy is apathy. I think their roster obviously is good enough to win a championship. They just sort of decide when they want to play. And when they do, they usually win. But that's been half the games approximately this season they decide to play. The other half, they decide they don't really feel much like it. And then, you know, they'll have a game where they sit all their good players against the Cavaliers on the road, and then they'll beat the Cavaliers. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But as long as they're in it, they have a very good chance of winning the conference, because I think, like you said, Steph, nobody really stands out as like, holy crap, this team is going to be really hard to beat. Denver, has done that the most. But like Memphis has now lost a couple games in a row after the incident with Shannon Sharpe that we didn't talk about, but you know, we could talk about at a later date if we want to. So
Shannon is in their heads. I mean, that, all kidding aside, and look, I'm a huge Shannon Sharpe fan. I love him. I love what he does, and he's a big LeBron guy as I am. But if you allow a former pro athlete, and Shannon Sharpe's a Hall of Famer, but if you allow a guy sitting courtside to get into your head the way the Memphis Grizzlies did that night, because they were in complete control of that game. From that point forward, it seems like the Lakers dominated, right? And it was like Memphis kind of lost their head. And let's not forget, Memphis kind of lost their head last year against Golden State. I remember Draymond, you know, ripping down, was it Desmond Bane? And, right, you know, I think Golden State was in their head at some point. Memphis was a better team than Golden State last year, at least record-wise, and I thought they were ready to beat them. But then again, Ja Morant gets hurt, and they had some other injuries too. But Memphis is an emotional young team, which is really refreshing to watch. But when you get to the postseason or in big moments, that can be frustrating because you got to stay focused. You can't let a Pro Football Hall of Famer sitting courtside get into your head. And that's what that team allowed to happen last week.
I think, you know, they're a blast to watch. You know, they got a lot of fun young players and athletes, and Ja Morant is, you know, spectacular to watch. But I don't think anybody goes up against them and fears them or fears Morant. You know, I think that, you know, he's a really fun player. He does like a lot of amazing things that kind of leave you just like in awe on the basketball court. But I don't see that they've like, he's a guy that maybe once or twice I've seen him take over a game and just dominate it. But like when you're going up against the Nuggets and Jokic, you're like, oh man, this guy, I mean, it's like he's got like an aura about him because he's just dominating every game he's playing. So I don't know what the deal is with Memphis. I've never loved the roster, because outside of Morant, they don't really have a consistent secondary scoring option. You know, they have Bane, who's a good, really good shooter, but I don't think he's ever going to be an all-star level player. Justin Jackson, is that right? Justin Jackson?
Yeah, JJJ, Junior. JJJ. I mean, he's a good player, good defensive
good,
player.
Very good player, but yeah, again, not all-star caliber in my mind. Is not a guy who's going to be average, who can put up 25 in a game consistently.
No.
So, you know, I don't know. I like the Pelicans roster way better than I like the Grizzlies roster. If we're just comparing young teams,
it's
you know,
more on high end, right? Cause you got Zion, you got Brandon Ingram, you got CJ McCollum. I mean, that big three is better than what Memphis can put forward. The thing I'll give Memphis credit for, they're one of the rare teams in the NBA. It seems like they bring it every night. And then that can get you a lot of wins.
Sometimes it's not a good thing, Sap.
No. For the regular season, it is though. So they bring it every night, and they, you know, they had the second best record last year. They had a better record than Golden State or any team in the Eastern Conference. They only looked up to Phoenix last year. We saw Phoenix, which won 64 games last year, lost in the second round to Dallas. And, of course, Memphis lost in the second round to Golden State. And they had some injuries, obviously. Morant missed half of that series. They were banged up. But it seems like, I mean, give them credit, they bring it every night. So that's going to give you 55, 56 wins. But then when everything gets focused, laser focused in the postseason, and everybody's bringing it every night, they're just not good enough to beat, say, Golden State or Denver or whatever other team
in the Western Conference. It's not just that, Sap, the laser focus. That's part of it for sure. But I think also, and I talked about this, I think, earlier in the season when the Celtics lost to Golden State, is like when you treat every game in the regular season like it's a huge game and you get so hyped up for it, when you lose, it takes a few games to recover. And I think that's what's happening to them right now. They were really hyped up for the Lakers game because, you know, they were playing LeBron and the Lakers and they, you know, were trying to prove a point. Shannon was there wearing the stupid goat mask and whatever. And them losing that game, I think, really affected them now to the point where they're like still in shock about losing that game. And so there's a trickle effect too. When you take every game in the regular season so, so seriously that when you lose, especially a game that you're really, really hyped for, suddenly you start questioning a lot of things. Well, we were so prepared for this game. We were so hyped. We were playing so well. How did we lose? Then you start questioning yourself a little bit. So I think you're seeing that with them. I don't know if they have, you know, if they have the, I think they're a mentally tough team in some regards, like, you know, they play physical and stuff like that, but they have such little experience on that team in terms of facing adversity. I don't know if I trust them at all in the postseason.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they had a great series against Minnesota last year, right? That was a knockdown series against the T-Wolves. It was two young, exciting teams, and Memphis was just a little bit better. But then when they went up against Golden State with all those veterans, all that experience, you know, you saw the difference there. So I don't even know if there's an Eastern Conference comp for Memphis, because those Eastern Conference teams, maybe it's Cleveland because they're fairly young, but I think Cleveland's better than Memphis. I think at least they have a chance to be better in the postseason. The Eastern Conference powers are veteran-laden teams. I mean, let's call the Celtics a veteran team at this point. I mean, Jaylen Brown's in his seventh year. Jason Tatum's in his sixth year. Marcus Smart's in his ninth
year. Well, they're playoff battle-tested.
And they're playoff-tested. That's how I look exactly. at it. Yeah, Philly's got, you know, Harden and Embiid been through the playoffs quite a bit. Obviously, Brooklyn with Kyrie and Durant. I mean, they've got titles that they've won, and Milwaukee's got the best player in the sport. And just and 2 years ago, they won the title.
Miami, too, you know, has been to the finals.
Nobody's more tested than them. Yeah, that's a whole ass team that's tough.
Yeah, and Sap, you know, right, we're about to finish up, but, you know, to your point, I think it's a great point, too. I look at the Western Conference, and I think this is the huge advantage that Golden State may have, or if the Lakers sneak in there and the Clippers. Those teams are basically the only teams that have players that have a lot of playoff experience, right? Paul George has plenty. Kawhi Leonard, we know what he's done in the postseason. He's Mr. Postseason. Obviously, LeBron has, you know, more postseason experience than anybody. Probably all these teams know has put together. And then Golden State, you know, they've been, you know, dominant for the past decade. So that's the advantage that those teams will have, is that they actually know how to win in the playoffs. Whether they end up doing it, I don't know. But I feel a lot more confident about teams that are, as you said, you know, playoff battle tested than the teams like Memphis that really aren't. Denver really isn't either. I mean, Jokic, they've been a bunch of times, but they've never really won a massive series.
Well, they came back from 3-1 down to beat the Clippers in the bubble, and then they lost to the Lakers in five games in the Western Conference Finals, whatever. But, you know, that was in the bubble. And right, that was a few years different. Ago. So, but it's not, they haven't been to the final. I mean, these are organizations, Denver, Memphis, New Orleans, Sacramento. They've never been to the finals. So, it appears to be LeBron and Steph Curry.
Sacramento's barely been to the playoffs.
For the last, 18 years. So, you've got all these newbies out there, and it'd be interesting to see what happens as we go forward.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's going to do it for us today at the Pick and Roll NBA podcast with Jet and Sap. Thanks to Full Press Coverage. Make sure you check out our social medias at JohnSap25, at Jet Stryer for all updates on the show. And you can find other good stuff that we tweet out there, too. In fact, Sap, I'm still waiting on a reply from you. I tweeted out, I was asking what your favorite movie scene of all time. So I want you to still think about it. I don't want it to be ignored. I want to see a reply.
No. Nope.
And also, last question for you, Sap, since we started off with a non-basketball thing and we'll end with a non-basketball thing, just a quick yes or no answer. Scott Rolen deserved to be in the Hall of Fame for baseball, yes or no?
I'll give you a two-word answer. Hell no.
Okay. I thought you wouldn't be happy about that development. No. I agree with you very wholeheartedly. We'll have to talk about that off-air or maybe a little bit next show. But thanks again, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with a new edition of the show. See ya.